Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Mind Movement Health Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Boyle, and before we dive into this week's episode, I have a small favour to ask. If you haven't hit the subscribe button yet to the podcast, please head on over to your podcast app now and hit subscribe. When you do that, it tells everybody else that this is a great podcast to listen to. So, thanking you in advance, let's dive into this week's episode. This week, I have special guest Sarah Liz King. Sarah is an accomplished exercise physiologist who has dedicated her career to promoting safe and effective exercise practices for individuals with eating disorders, exercise addiction, and hypothalamic amenorrhea. In our conversation today, we chat about hypothalamic amenorrhea, PCOS, menstrual cycles, and women's health and fitness. We also touch on eating disorders. So if this is a trigger at all for you, then please skip this episode. All right, let's have a listen in. Hi, I'm Kate Boyle, and welcome to the Mind Movement Health Podcast. Each week, I'll be bringing you health information from diet and lifestyle to movement and nutrition. My aim is to bring you bite-sized pieces of information that you can instigate into your everyday life to change your health. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Mind Movement Health Podcast. I have a special guest on the show today. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for our chat.
Well, before we dive in, because we're going to be talking about, you know, fitness and health and finding balance, can you share with the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So I'm Sarah. You can find me online pretty much everywhere at Sarah Liz King. I'm an exercise physiologist and I'm also a health and recovery coach. So I work with women who are recovering from hypothalamic amenorrhea or who are working on creating a healthier relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. This means some people are recovering from eating disorders or disordered eating, or they might have had a history of kind of chronic dieting and they're looking to give that up for something that is actually more sustainable and enjoyable and fits in with their life. So that's a little bit about what I do, who I am. I'm a dual citizen, so I'm American and I live in the lovely Australia where I now call home. I am a dog owner to a very cute little cavoodle called Henry, who you might hear barking in the background from time to time. I am a lover of all things outdoors. So when I am not working, you can find me walking by the beach or having a little swim in the ocean because I live very close by. I try and escape a few times a year to go ride horses, which is something I grew up doing. And other than that, I absolutely love spending time with my friends and my family when I can, when I'm not working crazy hours.
Amazing. So, you know, you mentioned I always pronounce this wrong, but hypothalamic amenorrhea. Yeah. Can you explain to listeners what that is?
So hypothalamic amenorrhea, first of all, a mouthful. And a lot of times it's abbreviated as HA or FHA. And in the medical world, it's called functional hypothalamic amenorrhea. It is the loss of your menstrual cycle for 3 months or longer due to underfueling your body, overtraining or too much exercise, and or psychological stress. For most people, it's a combination of those things. It is a form of secondary amenorrhea. So that means for most people, it is you've had a period at some point in your life and then it has gone missing for those three reasons that I mentioned before. It is very tricky because it is a lesser known condition. It's becoming, practitioners are becoming increasingly more aware of it, but is often misdiagnosed as PCOS. And they are two completely different syndromes. So functional hypothalamic amenorrhea or HA can happen to a person of any body size. There are people that may be more at risk. So for example, sports where people have to make weight or they have a very high training volume, that can put a person at risk of relative energy deficiency. So that, you know, not taking in enough nutrition, too much training, and HA can be a symptom of that relative energy deficiency. So that is the, I guess, definition of what it is.
Well, I was just saying to you before we started that I definitely had it growing up, being a dancer, ticking the box of overtraining, undereating, and I had it multiple times. So I lost my period for a number of years. So probably around the age of like 15 or 16, and I didn't get it back to maybe 18 or 19. And then it was very sporadic, like, you know, maybe twice a year. And then again, when I was living and working in Switzerland, so around the age of like 25, 26, again, really cold environment. I was walking to work every day. I clearly wasn't eating enough for the cold, and I lost it again then. So post that, you know, coming back, living in, you know, a more normal life, getting out of the dance world, you know, settling down. I've had regular periods ever since, which has been fantastic. But I remember thinking at the time, is this going to have any long-term effects on my body?
Yeah, it's such a common question people have, because I think, you know, when we're younger, when we don't have a period, we're kind of like, oh, this is pretty convenient. And a lot of times if you go to like the doctor, you bring it up with your GP, your primary healthcare physician, they're like, oh, don't worry about it. And they kind of sweep it under the rug a little bit. However, when we think about a menstrual cycle, it is a little bit of a monthly report card that things are going well for your body. It's not just there for fertility purposes. Your hormones do a number of different things throughout your body. So estrogen is really, really important in the protection and health of our bones. So it makes sure that our bone breakdown and our bone buildup are balanced so that we don't lose too much bone mass. When our estrogen levels are low and we're not getting our period, we lose bone at a much more significant rate. So that does put you at risk of things like osteopenia, which is low bone mineral density, or osteoporosis, which is the next step past that. And that can happen to people of a very young age. I had osteopenia. I thought I was invincible from not having a missing period, but it's silent. You'll never know whether or not you have it unless you have things like a history of stress fractures or stress injuries, or you get a bone mineral density scan, which is recommended. The other thing is estrogen is cardioprotective. So it's very important for our heart health. So we kind of see this from correlative data from postmenopausal women where their estrogen naturally declines and they are getting so many more impacts of heart disease and heart issues. So we know that it's very integral in some of the processes that keeps our heart healthy and our blood vessels flexible and all of those kinds of things. So those are the two like most significant impacts on our body. There are kind of correlations between, I guess, not having a period and other symptoms, which are more related to, I guess, that low energy availability or reduced relative energy deficiency, which are things like feeling cold all the time, having like more significant mood swings, a loss of libido. Obviously, you're not ovulating, so if pregnancy and starting or growing a family is something that you wanted to do, your ability to do that is obviously non-existent during the time where you're not having a menstrual cycle. So there are definitely short and long-term impacts. Some of these things we can reverse. Another thing that I didn't mention, which is like very, very common, is like really significant digestive issues and trouble sleeping, like night sweats and things like that. So a lot of those symptoms can be and do reverse when you restore your menstrual cycles. But one of the things that's very difficult and can take a really long time to reverse is that loss of bone mass. And not every single person who has a hypothalamic amenorrhea will get affected by every single symptom, but don't just think that, oh, I'll be the unicorn and this won't happen to me, because it's not really a matter of if, it's just a matter of when and how long you let it go for that these effects will really happen for you.
Well, you know, all the things you were talking about then, feeling cold all the time, lack of energy, mood swings, I'm like, yep, tick, 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 that was all me. And at the time when I was going through it, I didn't have great knowledge about my menstrual cycle, and I just figured, I knew it was a side effect of doing so much dancing and being so physical all the time. And I knew I was under eating, but you know, when you're in the midst of an eating disorder, trying to get out of that is very difficult as well. And then when I was older, I felt I was eating enough, but I was worried that it would affect my fertility. I was like, is this going to have a long-term effect? Will I be able to get pregnant when I want to get pregnant? And for me, you know, I was lucky enough, I had good knowledge by that time, you know, to change the way I was training and eating, and, you know, came back to Australia and didn't have as many sort of the hormetic stresses on my body. And I was lucky I didn't have any trouble conceiving my girls, but it definitely was something that was always in the back of my mind.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to know that hypothalamic amenorrhea is reversible, and it doesn't have long-term implications on fertility. However, for some people, not having a period, we only really know, I guess, like if you're going to have fertility issues once your periods come back and you start trying. But there's no like statistically significant difference between like the fertility issues in the normal population and those that have had hypothalamic amenorrhea and have recovered from it, in terms of like what we see in number of live births and things like that. So it is very possible to fall pregnant naturally. And obviously when you make all of those lifestyle changes to recover from hypothalamic amenorrhea, even if your timeline kind of means that you are going to go towards more fertility treatments, making all of those nutrition changes, exercise changes, stress management changes will mean, even if you go towards fertility treatments, they will be much more successful than if you were to just try and do them while still in the thick of disordered eating, an eating disorder, or hypothalamic amenorrhea.
And what sort of, you know, age group do you sort of see the most having issues with their menstrual cycle?
My gosh, I wish I could say it's one number, but it's a wide range. I definitely do see people in their teens, all the way up to people in their early 40s. So pretty much the whole age range of women of childbearing age is definitely what I see. And there are people that are coming for different reasons. So maybe the younger clients that I see, it's more to do with either the fact that they're like very active, or they're like very high up in whatever sport they're playing, or they have some history of disordered eating. I'd say the main range of women I see is people in their 20s and 30s. And these are people that are just really wanting their health back. They're wanting to not have so much of their brain space be taken up by thinking about food all the time and feeling really cold all the time and having their life revolve around exercise. And some people are thinking about future fertility, but it's not everyone's reason for wanting to recover. And then women who might be in their late 30s, early 40s, they may have, you know, had their kids and they're not really thinking about that, but they are thinking about their health and making sure that their mind and their body is in the healthiest stage. They're setting themselves up with sustainable, healthy behaviors so that when they do enter that kind of like perimenopause, menopause stage of life, they've kind of given themselves plenty of years with sufficient amounts of estrogen and making sure that they're not, you know, putting themselves at a higher risk of things like that low bone mineral density before they enter that stage of life. And often that coincides with things like them really wanting to kind of kick maybe decades of having a very strained relationship with food and exercise in their body. So there are so many people at different life stages, and there's no kind of like one person that you do see as quote unquote the typical case of hypothalamic amenorrhea. It really can affect a person of any background.
It's really interesting because, you know, I think most people would probably associate thinking it with, you know, more teenagers or early 20s, but, you know, going into your 30s, it's a very different time.
Hi, everyone. I'm interrupting this podcast to let you know that I have a brand new daily Pilates workout that you can download for free and work out with me. Now, this daily Pilates workout is just 15 minutes. It's going to help you build strength and mobility. It's going to help energize you, leave you feeling really good. And the best bit, it's only going to take 15 minutes. So to grab your free workout, head on over to the podcast show notes and click the Daily Pilates workout link. I can't wait to see you on your mat.
So if women are listening in and they're thinking, well, my cycle hasn't been regular, you know, maybe they're in their 30s, how do they know the difference between whether or not it may be PCOS or it may be the start of perimenopause or it is hypothalamic amenorrhea?
It's such a tricky one because there's so many crossover of symptoms in all of these different conditions. So if we look at the kind of the main one, menstrual disturbances is basically a big old catchphrase for irregular cycles or cycles that kind of don't fit in this picture perfect box. And if you're thinking, well, what is that picture perfect box? Our, I guess, reference for what we compare normal to is a cycle that's roughly somewhere between 28 to 35-ish days. Again, if you look and Google what is a normal cycle length, you will get a huge variety of answers anywhere between like 21 to 40 days. But, you know, 28 to 35 is kind of that rough kind of gold standard. Is your period lasting for at least 2 days up to 7 days? Is it a normal flow? So are you having to change your period products every kind of 2 to 3 hours on those days, especially at the beginning? And then for most people, does it taper off? Or are you getting really heavy or painful periods, for example, which might be something that can, I guess, give us an indication as to, is there something else going on? And then we're looking at, you know, are you having ovulatory cycles? When are you ovulating? How long is your luteal phase? So there's so many things that kind of go into that like normal cycle. And then when we think about menstrual disturbances, is anything that kind of like sits really outside of that range? Are you having really irregular cycles? So it might be like 33 days, 1 month, and then you're waiting 64 days until the next one. And that is both a symptom of PCOS and hypothalamic amenorrhea. So it can be really irregular cycles, but most of the time with hypothalamic amenorrhea, they're completely absent. With PCOS, it's more of the time that they're just irregular and you do have a period. Now, I'm going to throw in a spanner in the works, which makes things even more confusing. You can have both at the same time. So what the most common appearance of this is that people have hypothalamic amenorrhea, no periods. And then when their periods recover and return, they can have this like what we call like PCOS appearance to their blood tests, to some of the symptoms that they're having, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes it's just a matter of time of really being consistent with lifestyle changes and healthy habits and giving it time to just let the periods settle back into a rhythm, let the hormones kind of find their balance again, because a lot of the times when we're working on balancing our hormones, and I even hate that term because hormones are always in flux and that's what they're meant to do, but getting them into a rhythm that is where they're kind of meant to be, it takes time. And often we're making these lifestyle changes very, very quickly. and our hormones changing and kind of catching up to where they need to be can be very, very slow. It's like the race between the tortoise and the hare. Lifestyle changes are like the hare, and our hormones adapting and making the necessary adjustments are kind of the tortoise creeping up in the background. So I guess that's the first thing to think about is, like, does my cycle fit into that picture perfect box, or is it kind of either absent or very irregular? Now, if you're kind of going, okay, well, what kind of questions can I ask myself to decipher whether it is hypothalamic amenorrhea or PCOS, is to think about, in the hypothalamic amenorrhea basket, do I have a really good relationship with food, or is my relationship with food really strained? Do I have food rules, fears? Do I count my calories? Do I try and eat as low calorie as I can all the time? Am I thinking about food all the time? If you kind of answer yes to some of those, it could be the fact that you may be either intentionally or unintentionally underfueling yourself. For example, if you're like, yeah, but I just try and eat clean and be like as healthy as possible, and I avoid, you know, carbohydrates, red flags. You're probably not getting enough energy into your body. Other things you can ask yourself about is, like, do I feel really comfortable taking rest days and periods of rest throughout the year? So do I space my workouts out so that my body has complete time to rest? When I'm going through a really stressful, busy period with life or work, am I able to deprioritize exercise and prioritize rest, which is probably what my body needs? Are my workouts varied in intensity and length? Or when I go to the gym, am I always trying to push myself absolutely to the max every single time with lots of kind of like HIIT workouts or really heavy strength training all the time? Or do I vary my workouts throughout the week and throughout the month to go through periods of pushing and then resetting so that I have a bit more variety? Am I an athlete? Is my training load really, really high? Or do I just recreationally do a lot of sport or exercise or have a very active job and find it hard to fit in my food? Well, those are indications that you might not be getting enough fuel, or you might be overexerting yourself. And that third period, that third kind of area is like, am I really stressed? Had there been lots of big life changes going on around me, or internally, do I place a lot of pressure on myself to meet really, really high standards? Do I have lots of black and white thinking? That's all sources of stress that can be internal as well. If you're kind of going, I definitely kind of sit in that camp, it could be the case that hypothalamic amenorrhea is potentially the cause of your missing periods. Whereas PCOS is driven by a different reason as to why your periods become irregular or shut down. And that has to do, a lot of the times, I guess the most common form of PCOS is related to insulin resistance. So on a blood test, can I see that I do have insulin resistance or high HbA1c, which is, I guess, a long-term view of what your insulin levels are doing? Do I have other symptoms related to that insulin resistance? So backpedal, that insulin resistance causes our ovaries to kind of not function properly, and we have really high androgen levels. And those high androgen levels can show up as symptoms like central abdominal weight gain, acne, hirsutism, so the presence of hair growth in a male-like growth pattern. And those can be really strong indications that PCOS might be more likely the cause for you. And insulin resistance can, again, happen to a person of any body size, any background. And it is really a combination of asking yourself about lifestyle factors and making sure that you go and get relevant blood tests done and having someone with expertise in these conditions look and interpret those results. So hormone specialists are endocrinologists. They are the people that know hormones inside out and upside down and back to front. They will be, and especially reproductive endocrinologists, they will be the most helpful in deciphering what might be going on for you. But asking yourself those questions can be a very good place to start.
Well, that was such a thorough explanation. So thank you for sharing that, because I think it clears it up quite a bit. And talking about, you know, our menstrual cycle and lifestyle changes, what are some of the lifestyle changes you encourage women to think about and adopt to really support their cycles?
Yeah. So I guess I'll start with some of the changes to make if you are recovering from hypothalamic amenorrhea. And then I'll just mention some changes or things to think about in just maintaining healthy habits and a regular menstrual cycle. So if you're trying to recover your period, if you don't yet have it back and you think hypothalamic amenorrhea may be the cause of your missing periods, the changes that you have to make are relatively simple, but that does not make them easy. And that is, you have to be fueling your body more. You have to be eating more. And that means also eating consistently throughout the day and not just kind of waiting to take in all of your food until the end of the day. So consistent, regular, adequate meals and snacks. And you're going to have a high energy intake, probably a lot more than you have had previously, because we're really trying to kick this hypothalamus in our brain into gear and show it that there's an abundance of energy around. It doesn't need to feel stressed. Everything is safe. So eating enough and making sure that you're also eating enough of the right things. And I hate using the terms right or wrong, but this means having all foods available to you, making sure that you're getting a plentiful amount of carbohydrates, because we know it's not just the energy availability that's important, it's also the carbohydrate availability that is important in our body sensing that things are safe and it can restart our menstrual cycle. The other thing is related to exercise, so really toning things down. And I always tell people, yes, it's quite sad to kind of have to take a break or take a pause from what you're doing, because exercise can be really enjoyable. It can be a hobby. It can be your career. But it is short term. And the more chance you give your body to have sufficient amounts of rest, the faster your recovery will be. So as a starting point, at least cutting out all high intensity exercise. So weight training, running, intense sports, all of those kinds of things, swapping it for much more low intensity things is a great place to begin. And then reducing the frequency and the volume of exercise that you're doing overall to make sure that you still have something to give you, I guess, movement for kind of your mental health. So gentle walks, going for yoga, doing things like mat Pilates can be okay as long as they are in reasonable amounts. And then the third is managing psychological stress. So both how stress happens around you and the stress that you place on yourself internally. And stress management is such a tricky one, because I often find a lot of the clients I see are very high achievers. They're very go, go, go. They really have so much ambition, are so knowledgeable, and they are some of the most intelligent people that I've ever met. And because of this, it is very, very hard to embrace that kind of slow down, take a pause, learn to breathe mentality. It can feel like a foreign language. So just being really curious about different ways that you can manage your stress. So for some, that might be meditation. For some, that might be journaling. For some, that might be, you know, taking up very slow, gentle yoga, like a yin yoga class a couple times a week. It could be seeing a coach or a therapist to make sure that you have someone to talk to and vent to. But it is probably the piece that people miss out on the most and is a really big piece of the puzzle in recovering your periods. Now, once your periods are there, you know, what can we do to support them? And I think it's really about looking, like I said before in the podcast, as your period's kind of your monthly report card. And it can give you some information as to what you might need. If your periods become really, really light, and normally they're not like that, you could be going through a period of stress, or maybe you think to yourself, oh, have I increased my training load significantly and maybe not adjusted my intake of food accordingly? Do I need to, you know, make a shift and make sure I'm fueling my body a little bit more? But I think for most women, supporting your cycle comes down to thinking about your own unique individual needs. I know we're seeing a lot of like, train for your menstrual cycle and like eat this way at this stage of your cycle. And a lot of that isn't really evidence-based. So it's really about kind of going, okay, if I'm exhausted, maybe today is not the day to do the most intense workout. How can I adjust this? And I think that's just being sensible and using that information as a form of self-care to guide you in the choices that you make. If you are more hungry on one day, giving yourself permission to actually go along with that instead of judging yourself or feeling guilty for it, because your body is always like whispering to you what it needs. And if you're able to listen to that, then you will likely have balance with your hormones. I think it's when we start to ignore our body's signs and signals that sometimes we run into problems.
Well, I think, you know, everyone, most women can relate to that, that we do go through stages where we get really busy and we've got lots on our plate and we feel like we just have to keep going. We don't have the time to stop and rest. And so we do hear those signals, but we think, it'll be fine. We'll just keep going.
Yeah. And it's so easy because like we live in a very go, go, go world. Like, you know, the hustle culture is something that we all are surrounded by, but especially for people that have had, I guess, history of hypothalamic amenorrhea, because some people's cycles are just like, they'll come hell or high water. But for others, they are more sensitive to realize that, you know, if you don't take the breaks when your body is telling you in those little whispers, eventually it'll shout and then you'll have no choice but to listen to it. So I've definitely learned the hard way that it's much better to just check your ego at the door, listen to what your body needs and make those little adjustments in the moment than it is to just push through and then get to a point where you're like, now I have no other choice and I have to make much more grand, significant changes.
And I think too, I know as I've gotten older and gone through my 20s and then my 30s and I've just started my 40s, that you have to kind of realize over time that you do need to change sometimes your fitness or, you know, be more mindful of your stress levels and things that might not have affected you in your 20s are now affecting you in your 30s. So, you know, and I think sometimes it's hard to let go of what you went to the gym every day in your 20s and in your 30s, you don't feel like that's the same. And, you know, you had that identity that that's who you were, but it's not who you need to be now.
Yeah. And knowing that our physiology like slightly changes through the different stages of our lives. Like we are very, very capable of being strong well into our 40s and 50s and beyond. But the way that our body takes time to recover and adapt takes longer. So we might need more rest days. We might still be able to like lift quite strong, but we need more protein, we need more energy, we need more rest so that our body can actually do those repair and restorative processes so that we are going on an upwards trajectory of our performance and our strength and not a downwards. And it is hard, you know, to kind of make those changes and realize like maybe your body isn't going to be able to sustain exactly what you did before. But always remembering that your body is trying to support you in whatever stage of life that you're in and radically accepting that, you know, even though your training might look different doesn't mean that that's bad. And if you're able to see it that way, it's so much easier to embrace those different seasons of your life than fight them, which, you know, I definitely did in my late 20s and early 30s when I realized, oh, I don't have as much capacity as I used to.
But I think too, it can also be an opportunity, you know, if you are trying, say, maybe yoga now that you might be getting a little bit older or leaning into strength training. It can be, you know, a new outlet, or you can find that new hobby that, you know, serves you so well. You know, it can help with lowering your stress response, or if you're lifting weights, you know, you can really build that muscle mass, and it's something you may never have thought of before, but you actually really enjoy.
Yeah. Get curious, try new things. I think, you know, age is not the barrier, and we have to remember that. It's just that how much we can do sometimes needs to adapt and change. But that is, you know, that is something that we always will have to deal with no matter what age we are, because our time, our priorities, everything is always changing around us. We're not robots that wake up every day and have like the exact same experience as the day before.
No, thank goodness. Otherwise, life would be pretty boring.
It would be. Yeah.
Now, when it comes to fitness, what do you recommend as a balance, especially for women when it comes to, you know, cardio and strength training? Because I know a lot of women reach out to me and say, what do you suggest? You know, how much of I should I be doing each week of my cardio and my strength training?
Yeah. So strength training for women is extraordinarily important. We are definitely more at risk of osteopenia and osteoporosis, especially as we move into that postmenopausal stage of life. So whenever I talk to women who come to see me and go like, well, what should I be doing? Like, what is the best balance of things? I always say movement should be something that you enjoy, but there are some kind of things that we need to sprinkle in to make sure that you have the body that allows you to do the things that you love. So maybe you love to dance, or you love to swim, or you love to run. Everybody at a minimum should be doing 2 days of resistance training, 2 days of strength training. And that is what the government recommends. So if you look at the Australian Physical Activity Guidelines and others around the world are similar, it says, you know, 2 days of full body resistance training. And when we think about resistance training, well, what does that mean? It's relative to the individual, but for most of us, it means putting a stress on our body so that our muscles adapt and our bones also adapt and become stronger. So for a lot of us, that means lifting weights. Now, you might be like, oh, I don't really love the gym. It is one of those things that maybe you don't love it, but it keeps you injury-free and it keeps your body functional and fit. Those going into their older years, it helps with balance and falls prevention. And all of those things are incredibly important. So think about that kind of movement as your medicine that allows you to do all of the other things that you like in your life. And for most of the people I see, even if they're like, oh, I'm not really like a gym person, I think once you're in an environment where someone else is like really passionate about it and they can like see and tell you all of the things that you're doing better and mirror back to you all of the positives that you're experiencing as a result of starting this, it actually makes people enjoy it so much more. They're like, oh, I'm actually getting a lot out of this. So 2 resistance training sessions at a week minimum. Then when it comes to our cardiovascular fitness, having a strong and healthy heart is really, really important. But for a lot of us, we can kind of get it without thinking too hard about it. So anywhere from like 150 to 300-ish minutes a week is, again, what the Australian Physical Activity Guidelines recommends. But that's moderate physical activity. If you're doing something that's a little bit more vigorous, the recommendation drops a little bit. So 75 to up to 150 minutes a week. And I usually say, like, if we think about it, it's roughly like 30 minutes a day. So going for a 30-minute walk or going for 3 10-minute walks. And most people can accumulate that. I think it's important not to get tied up in doing the quote unquote perfect amount, but rather think about, what kind of lifestyle do I want to live? What does an active, sustainable, healthy lifestyle look to me? And what does work? What works with my life? But if we're looking at the guidelines, those are kind of the best balance of those things. And then you might need something that kind of helps you maintain your mobility and flexibility. So thinking about stretching and yoga and all of those kinds of activities to keep you mobile and supple.
Well, being a Pilates instructor, I know over time, like obviously you said, we do focus a lot on mobility, but over the years, you know, I've learned the importance of strength. So, you know, I still have kettlebells in the studio and weighted medicine balls and, you know, weights and things. And we use the spring resistance and, you know, I really will put that spring resistance up high when I know that I've got a client that maybe has had a hip replacement and we really need to start, you know, loading those muscles again and really working through that strength. So I don't think that's very common of Pilates to have that stuff in there, but you know, we always add in compound movements like squats and lunges and balance work because so many of our clients are, you know, aging and balance is a huge thing that really does tend to decline as we age.
Yeah. And anything, and it's all relative to the individual. So what I always say is you need to give your body new and novel loads. So it's always adapting to whatever you put it through. It will always kind of like get to a point where everything is maintained and that is fine. But sometimes if you have had an injury or, you know, you are recovering from a hip replacement, something like that, we do have to give the body new and novel loads so that it adapts and can be strong in a multitude of different environments. So Pilates is a great one. I'm a little biased because I am also a Pilates instructor, although it feels like a former life now. I definitely miss instructing, but I still really enjoy doing reformer and mat Pilates.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, obviously there's benefits to all the different styles of Pilates and being able to work with resistance is really important as well. And then, as you said, increasing that resistance depending on the client and their stage of life too, which, you know, you will get in some studios and not so much in others depending on their methods, you know, and the way they teach. But it definitely can be interwoven into the method, which is great.
Yeah.
Now, we always sort of wrap up our podcast by asking our guests if there is one piece of health advice that listeners that are, you know, could go off and instigate straight away after listening to this podcast, what would it be?
I guess my biggest piece of advice is if you feel like your relationship with food is a little bit strained, if you feel like you're always thinking about food, you're always dieting, you're always kind of like, brain's always filled with what can I eat and what can I not eat? And maybe you're saying to yourself like, oh, yes, but like I quote unquote, I'm too old or I've lived with this for too long to do anything about it. Just know that you're never too old or too young to work on improving your relationship with food, with exercise, and with your body. It can give you so much freedom and it can give your health such a boost to have that, because we often think of health as just our physical health, our mental health, our emotional health, our social health are just as important. And our relationship with food and exercise weaves through all of those different areas. So my greatest piece of advice is don't let it go on for any longer. Definitely seek support in improving those areas of your life because it can be so transformational.
Agree. And I think, you know, like you said, it's not just, you know, teenagers or people in their 20s. You can be any age and we eat all the time and we should be eating, you know, every day generally. So it's something that affects us all the time and also how we interact with people because food can be a joy. You know, we usually have it when we're celebrating. You know, it's one of those things we share with others. So, you know, improving our relationship with it is fundamental, but it's not always easy and it's not always a short-term thing. I know for myself, it's taken many years, you know, to work out of that sort of restricted eating. And, you know, even sometimes, you know, my mindset will want to fall back into that and I have to be really conscious, you know, of making good choices that are going to support my body.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, once you learn those fundamental skills, you can carry them throughout your life.
Amazing. Now, where can our listeners reach out and connect with you?
So you can find me on all social media platforms. So YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, at Sarah Liz King. And that's my website as well. SarahLizKing.com. And I also host a podcast called Holistic Health Radio. So on all of your favorite podcasting platforms, you can find that.
Amazing. Well, I'll link that all up in the show notes too, so listeners can head there. But Sarah, thank you for coming on the podcast today and sharing such a wealth of information. You know, it's, you know, one of my goals of this podcast is to really support women. And yeah, I just thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening into the podcast. Please hit subscribe to be updated for each time we release a new podcast.